Well, Southernmost starts the weekend that marriage equality is passed by the Supreme Court. The same weekend, a devastating flood hits this little fictional community in Tennessee near Nashville. And people there start to blame the flood on the Supreme Court decision. They say it's the wrath of God. At the same time, a gay couple's house, they've been living quietly in this community, and their house is washed away. They go to Asher Sharp's house. He's a preacher, local preacher, seeking shelter, and his wife refuses them shelter. So this really has a huge impact on Asher, because 10 years ago his brother came out to him, and he rejected him in a really terrible way, and his brother disappeared. And so for 10 years Asher has just been in deep grief, because he loved his brother, but his whole life he had been raised to reject somebody like that. And so for 10 years he's been wanting a do-over, and he's been wanting to correct the way that he handled that. So he's done a lot of self-examination. And this combination of things leads him to think, I have to stop just thinking about this, and I have to actually act. And so he starts to be outspoken on the issue, and of course he loses church, he gets divorced, and he loses custody of his little boy. And so he kidnaps his little boy and he runs off to Key West.
Why did you write the book? Now, you happen to be gay, right? Mm-hmm. That's a known fact. When did you come out?
Very late in life. I was 34.
When did you know?
When I was about 12.
Wow. Do you kind of blame your Southern culture, where you grew up, on why it was so late?
For me, it was more about being raised in the evangelical church and just being told that you could pray it away and, you know, denying my own self, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't really want to write a coming out book, though. I wanted to write a novel that was more from the point of view of people who love somebody with whom they fundamentally disagree. And I think that all of us can relate to that in one way or another, even if it's not about, you know, LGBTQ issues. For instance, the book became a lot more relevant after the election, because no matter who you voted for, there's somebody in your life that you love who probably voted the opposite way, and you can't quite wrap your mind around how somebody you love so deeply can so fundamentally disagree with you. So to me, that's what the book's about.
There are so many themes, though, sub-themes, let's say, in the book. Fatherhood,
yes.
Rural, working class, mm-hmm. Gay, evangelical, all of the above. And one thing, you wrote an essay about the book, and one thing you say in the essay, you compare this book, although it's your sixth novel, to something about having a child for the first time. How old is your first child, your oldest child?
Well, my children are 20 and 23 now.
Okay.
And so, you know, this was my sixth novel, but it took me that long to feel like I could really write about being a parent, you know, because you keep waiting to totally understand being a parent, or for something to click and have this great knowledge, and that never happens. And you finally realize that, you know, being a parent is just about doing the best you can do and just trying your best to be the best parent you can be. And that's really the only guidebook there is. And so I thought that was a good theme for a novel, that sort of powerlessness that we have as parents. Because really, we don't have any power as parents. We eventually have to, you know, unleash our children on the world. And so it's about that fear of, you know, trying to protect your child.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little bitty town called Lily, sort of between Corbin and London in southeastern Kentucky, in Laurel County. And it's sort of a tri-county area, so I felt I had a lot of growing up in Laurel, Whitley, Knox, even Clay County, Leslie County. Very rural. I knew everybody in my community. Unfortunately, Lily's not like that anymore. There's now a lot of people that have moved in who, you know, don't have generational knowledge of the place, and it's more of a transient place. And I really grieve the loss of that, you know, sort of small town feel where you really did know everybody. Not that that was always great, you know. I mean, I don't mean to romanticize it. It had pros and cons, but I think we've lost a lot of that, even in our real small towns in Kentucky. We've lost that sense of knowing each other so well.
I bring up that question because you talk about parenting, you talk about the recent elections, the whole people still homophobic around the country, not just in small town Kentucky.
Yes.
And it seems like that's part of the theme of Southernmost. Is that accurate? You call it, what did you say in your essay, that it was a mirror kind of?
Yes.
You? So talk a little bit about that, the mirror that this...
I think most Americans like to think of the South as the other. I think of it more as just a microcosm or a mirror. I think whatever is happening in the South is happening in the rest of the country, even the world. And lots of times it's just easy for people to say, oh, something racist happened. Of course it happened in the South or whatever. For instance, if something racist, some racist event happens in the South, the media even, you know, will pointedly say, it was because it was in the South. Whereas if it happens in, I don't know, like Seattle, it's just because of the individual that committed the act. You know what I mean?
I do.
And so I think one thing that literature has to do is sort of correct that notion.
So is that the intention of the book, to correct the notion of the stereotypes of the South?
Well, I think that that happens in the book, but the intention of the book is just to tell a human story about this father and how much he loves his son and how much he loves his brother and how we really have to just love each other for who we are, and that's the only way that any of us can be happy. You know, that's my real intention.
You grew up in a Pentecostal church, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, so is this autobiographical a little bit?
I mean, the essential truth is autobiographical. None of this happened to me. None of these characters are based on people I know. However, you know, to some degree, there's a little bit of me in every character I write. And I really can only write about what I know. My experience with the Pentecostal church is that, you know, I disagreed with a lot of the things that were being said from the pulpit. The first thing I noticed was that I felt it was pretty misogynistic, and that was the first thing I noticed. And then there were lots of phobias that happened in that pulpit. However, the individual people I know in that church, who still go to that church, are, you know, loving, kind, open-hearted people. And so I think to some degree I'm always writing about that because I'm trying to rectify that sort of rift between, you know, being these really kind, loving people, but also sitting in the congregation while that happens in the pulpit. You know, so it's, I think a lot of us grapple with that, and especially a lot of us that grow up in that kind of church, or even, I mean, where I grew up, even if you didn't go to that kind of church, the culture was like that. You were sort of taught, if you didn't go to that kind of church, you were wrong.
Forgive me for moving into your personal life. You kind of came in here with gusto talking about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go away from that. If you want to, let's come back to that and how this book is political or how it might inspire people who have different views when it comes to politics and otherwise.
Well, it seems like these days everything is political. You know, I wish it wasn't that way, but it's like every day you get up and it's another big news story, and you look at your social media and it's another big fight on your news feed, and everything is so fraught. And so if anything, I want the book to be a bridge and, you know, to heal those divides. I certainly don't want it to further those divides. And so when you read the book, I think you'll find that I'm trying to represent every facet of belief about, you know, whether that be about faith or whether that be about what you believe politically or what you believe about gay people or whatever. I'm showing every facet of that. And in no case do I ever want to characterize any of the people. You know, the biggest fanatic in the book, who is really, she's violent. She holds a gun to her son's head because he's gay, you know, and tries to, quote unquote, scare the gay out of him. Even her, I don't want to make a caricature of, you know, even though I disagree so vehemently with her, I want to find the humanity in her. That's what a novel should do. You know, a novel should find the complexity in everybody.
How do you imagine that this novel will be that bridge for people?
Well, I think because people will encounter people who are not like them, and they're with them for 300 pages, and so they're sort of forced to think about them in a different way. That's something I find deeply troubling, is that in America today, we all live in these little bubbles where we're only talking to the people who agree with us. When I was growing up, my aunt ran a store, Dot's Grocery, in Fairston, Kentucky, and everybody sort of would congregate there at some point in the day. And, you know, they would argue about politics, and they would argue about religion, and et cetera, et cetera. But nobody ever really got mad at each other. They talked it out in a loving way because they loved each other. And now it's so easy for us, you know, to just end up in an argument with some stranger on Facebook that we're never going to see their face. I find that terribly sad and distressing, and I think it's done awful damage to us.
What's your favorite part of the book? And that's probably a very difficult question, but is there a part that you really resonate with, or a line, or a character?
Well, I think my favorite aspect of the book is the relationship between the little boy and the father, and how that love that exists between them, all that happens between the lines. You know, I never come out and blatantly say to you, this father loves his son. That's just shown in every action. And I think the best thing about a novel is what the reader takes from it between the lines, not necessarily what is told to them in big neon signs, you know. And so I love that people are talking about the relationship between this little boy and his father, because that's the thing I never blatantly report on in the book.
I know that there have been several reviews. Everything I've read has been pretty positive, including from Dorothy Allison.
Yes.
Am I right about that? And don't you kind of revere her pretty big?
Yes. Yeah, she was one of the first writers who gave me permission to write about my own people, you know, because I come from rough, hardworking people. You know, there's nothing polished about them. They're working class at its bones. And she wrote about that. She's the first person I know to write about that, and it gave me permission to.
One thing I've heard you say is this is complex. I mean, the complexity of the rural South and of all of the issues that this book involves.
Yes. I think that it's really hard to put a book out into the world that does complexify the South and complexifies rural people. I don't think the larger world wants that. I mean, I think people largely want media that solidifies their notions of a place.
How realistic is this scenario? Evangelical preacher has a gay brother, that's realistic. Rejects him, that's realistic. But then all of a sudden, this big change and takes his son. Mm-hmm. How realistic, you think?
Well, another thing the book is based on is that sometime in the mid-2000s, like 2006, somewhere in there, a Methodist pastor was excommunicated from the Methodist church because he went against the church's bylaws, and his son asked him to perform his marriage ceremony, his gay son, and he did. And so I was thinking a lot about that pastor and how he really put himself on the line. And, you know, I read somewhere he said something like, I had been, you know, thinking quietly about this for years, but I finally had to act on it. And I think a whole lot of us have had moments where, you know, we've quietly, you know, thought about things, and then suddenly we have to stand up and say something. You know, there comes that point where you can no longer just be quiet about it, where you have to do something.
You do something quite a bit in your writing. What have you been quiet about and have yet to do something about?
Well, you know, I never wrote about being gay until this book. And so I think that I was quiet about that for a long time. Not really because I was hiding or anything like that, but just because I just didn't want that to be my whole identity, you know? I think of myself as a very multifaceted person, and I think often when you're gay, you get reduced down to that's all you are, in a way that, you know, a straight writer isn't thought of that way, you know? And so I wanted to write these stories of my family, and and that's what I did for my first five books. And but then this book, it made sense to explore that other facet of myself.
If you had to kind of narrow it down, what do you want really people to get?
I want them to know that it's about a father and a son, a parent and a child, I should say, and that, you know, unbreakable bond between a parent and a child. I want them to know that it's about rural people and the complexity of rural people. And I want them to know that it's about people of faith, people who are believers, and lots of different ways of being a believer. So all the way from a, you know, fanatical evangelical, all the way to a person who doesn't really align with any church, but still has a God of her own understanding. Those are the things that I find really interesting right now, you know, belief, parenthood, the complexity of rural people. So that's what the book's about to me.
How do you imagine that this particular novel might change someone?
I already know how it's changed someone. I've already had letters from people. I had a letter recently, an email, I should say, from a woman in Texas who told me that she bought the book because she was really struggling with her own faith since her child came out. And when her child came out, her immediate reaction was just total love and acceptance of her child. But then she thought, okay, how do I go back to my church where the preacher's preaching against this and preaching against my child? And so she said that, you know, she read a synopsis of this book somewhere and she thought, this is perfect for me right now. And she read it and it really helped her through that process. And in her instance, she felt that the thing she had to do is find a new church. She couldn't go to a church that was condemning her child from the pulpit. And she said the book helped her to do that. You know, so that's really why I write, is to hear from somebody like that, you know, is to have that human connection. I think that most writers write for that. You know, it's strange because you're writing the book alone and, you know, the book's in a bookstore separate from you, but then there's that connection with people. That's what moves me.
Silas House, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I'm really grateful, and best of luck with Southernmost.
Thank you so much.